Miss Horn. She was upon the edge o' 38.
Weel, she had a sair time o't.
Not that sair, so far as I can see. And who should ken better? She's had a bin doon sittin', and should have had as long as I was to the fore. Na, na, it was neither so young, nor yet so sair.
Ay, but she was a patient creature wi' all flesh,
persisted Mrs. Mellis, as if she would not willingly be foiled in the attempt to extort for the dead some syllable of acknowledgment from the lips of her late companion. Deed she was that, a wheen o'er patient with some. But that came o' hadin' mair heart nor brains. She had feelings, gin ye like, and to spare, but I never took o'er any of the stock. It's a pity she had not the judgment to match, for she never misdoubted anybody enough. But I wot it disna matter now, for she's gone where it's less wanted. For when it has the harmlessness o' the dove in this ill-walled warl, there's a feck o' ten that has the wisdom o' the serpent. And the serpents make sair work with the doves, let alone them that flees into the very mouths o' them.
"Well, you're just right there," said Mrs. Mellis. "And as you say, she was aye some easy to persuade. I had no doubt she believed to the very last he would come back and marry her."
"Come back and marry her? Who or what div you mean? I just tell you, Mistress Mellis, and it's well you're named, can you dare to hint at one word of such clavers? It's this side of this door of mine used to be less acquaint with." As she spoke, the hawk eyes of Miss Horn glowed on each side of her hawk nose, which grew more and more hooked as she glared, while her neck went craning forward as if she were on the point of making a swoop on the offender. Mrs. Mellis's voice trembled with something very like fear as she replied,
"Good guidance, Miss Horn. What have I said to gar you look at me so by ordinary as that?"
"Said," repeated Miss Horn, in a tone that revealed both annoyance with herself and contempt for her visitor. "There's no a clever in all the countryside that ye maun fess at home aneath your oxter, as gin it were the prodigal afore he repented. Ye se get small thanks for such like here, and her lying there as she'll lie till the judgment day, poor thing."
"I'm sure I meant no offence, Miss Horn," said her visitor. "I thought abody kent that she was ill about him."
"About who, in the name of the Father of Lies?"
"Oh, about that long-legged doctor that set up for the Injies, and died afore he won across the equator. Only folks said he was no more dead nor a halvert worm, and would be home when she was married."
"It's all lies, frae head to foot and frae heart to skin."
"Weel, it was plain to see she dwined away after he gaed, and never was herself again. Ye dinna deny that."
"It's a' havers," persisted Miss Horn, but in accents considerably softened. "She cared no more about the child nor I did mysel. She dwined, I grant ye, and he gaed away, I grant ye. But the wind blows and the water runs, and the tane has little to do with the tither."
"Weel, weel, I'm sorry I said anything to offend ye, and I canna say mair. With your leave, Miss Horn, I'll just gang and take a last look at her, poor thing."
"'Deed, ye should do nothing of the kind. I shall let nobody glower at her, it would gang and spare just a cavers about her, Mistress Mellis. To say it, such a dove as my Grizel, poor soft-hearted, winsome thing, would have looked twice at any sicker serpent as him. Na, na, mem, gang your ways home, and come back straight for your prayers the morn's morning. By that time she'll be quiet in her coffin, and I'll be quiet in my temper. Syne I'll let you see her, maybe. I wish I was weel rid of the sight of her, for I canna bide it. Lord, I canna bide it."
These last words were uttered in a murmured aside, inaudible to Mrs. Mellis, to whom, however, they did not apply, but to the dead body. She rose notwithstanding in considerable displeasure, and with a formal farewell walked from the room, casting a curious glance as she left it in the direction of that where the body lay, and descended the stairs as slowly as if on every step she deliberated whether the next would bear her weight. Miss Horn, who had followed her to the head of the stair, watched her out of sight below the landing, when she turned and walked back once more into the parlour, but with a lingering look towards the opposite room, as if she saw through the closed door what lay white on the white bed. "It's a God's mercy I had no feelings," she said to herself, "to even my bonny Grizel to sic a long kite-clung chiel as yon. Ay, poor Grizel, she's gone frae me like a knotless thread."
End of chapter 1.
Chapter 2 of Malcolm by George MacDonald. Chapter 2. Barbara Cadenagh. Miss Horn was interrupted by the sound of the latch of the street door, and sprung from her chair in anger.
"Canna they let her sleep for 5 minutes?"
she cried aloud, forgetting that there was no fear of rousing her any more. "It'll be Jean come in frae the pump," she reflected after a moment's pause, but hearing no footstep along the passage to the kitchen, concluded, "It's no her, for she gangs